Accession number 10768, reel 7.
Mr. John Granger, reel 7. We were talking about your time in the Somme area, round about Heberton in particular.
Yeah.
I wondered if you could take us through a sort of typical daily routine, starting perhaps at stand 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
If you had it. What was stand 2 for your...
The trenches, we all just reporting. The check-up, that was all. When you're in the trenches. But when you come out, say, to reserve, well, then you had to do... You were back from the actual front line, and you could get out into the open, say, back being a little village there. Well, it was knocked down, it was ruined, and you'd do the normal parades then.
But I mean stand to where you're standing to in case the enemy attacked. Did you do that?
Only for a short period. It wasn't really a ritual, as you might say. Everything, you had your lookouts, to see if anything did happen or listen for anything happening. But if it came to them, well, you just get your muster and there you were.
How were the sentries, the lookouts, organised?
They were all on the rota business.
And what was the rota? How was that sorted out?
Well, it was just one every now and again, you know. There's only perhaps one at each end of a trench or something like that. There never were very many.
Were you ever on sentry duty?
Many times, yes.
What would you do on sentry
duty? Just stand through and on the firing bay.
Would you actually look over the top, or would you?
If you were a damn fool, yes, you might get a bullet in your bloody head if you looked over the top.
So how would you keep lookout without looking over the top?
Well, you just waited your chance, and it was more or less the listening. I was lucky, because I was so small, you see, I could get that little vision across the top without my head going over. You see, I could just get that skimming. I could look across the flat there without showing, not say about that much of my napper. You see, I'd just drop my eyes anywhere I needed. It was all right.
So, when you're on duty, you wouldn't be looking over continuously. You'd be listening.
Oh, you're most part of listening, yeah.
And looking occasionally.
And yes, that's right, yeah.
Would you use a periscope at all?
They did use periscopes.
Did you use them?
We had them only a few times, but they were very prevalent, taking it all over, longwise, because, say, different regiments, perhaps at different areas, they'd probably find a periscope was a big advantage. But they were like a box thing, you know, like that. And you looked through there, and up there, they were very handy.
So you had used them occasionally?
Oh, I used them. This was very handy.
The mirror one, though? You just put the mirror on your bayonet. Did you have that one?
I wasn't mugging up for that, no.
Why not?
Well, put anything like that, you might get a bullet hit it. And we had an example of that. One lad put a spade up like that. Swank him, you know, with his hat on the top of it. And a bullet came, hit the spade, shot down his hand, and it went there, right through his arm there.
His wrist,
yes. Oh, self-inflicted.
So you wouldn't show your bayonet with a mirror on it?
If you wanted to be stupid, but if you didn't, well, you didn't use those sort of tricks.
How long would you be on sentry duty at a time?
During the night, 4 hours and two off or something like this.
Would that continue during the day?
Well, it wouldn't. Wait a minute now, you see, they had the lookouts during the day, yes.
During the day, you'd have your... What would be the routine after this stand to, which
well,
was a big thing?
But you couldn't do marching or anything like that.
No, I mean in the trenches.
And in the trenches all, it was a case of nattering away to one another, playing cards. Packs of cards were a godsend. We used to play, do a lot of gambling.
What sort of games did you play?
Well, all the card games, anything to gamble. We'd gamble on a drop of water running down the top of a shovel. Gamble on anything.
What sort of sums would you gamble?
Oh, yeah, francs.
People wouldn't lose a lot of their wages then, would they, or would they?
Well, they hadn't got enough wages to lose, had you? But we did make, there was a time when the odd one made a good packet. I was on a school one time playing that, and everything run for me, and it was only once, and I finished up with a load of tenpence French francs. And a funny thing, at that period we got a notification, and anybody with a what's the king of France, that was Richard the Third, one of them, Napoleon III, it was, they wanted any 10 pence pieces, 10 cent pieces for that, could send them in and they'd get an extra price for them. Well, I had a pocket full of these. I was glad to get rid of them. I made a profit of about 30 or 40 cents on that.
And that was in the line you were playing this sort of game?
Oh, well, that was in the line, yeah.
Would you play in the actual trench, or would you be in one of the cubbyhole dugouts?
Anywhere where it was convenient and nice and comfortable. Sometimes inside, sometimes out, wherever you could get. When two or three gathered together, it was a case of, they weren't necessarily talking about religion. They were on the gamble.
What would they talk about in the trenches? What were the sort of topics that people talked about?
Anything that just cropped up. It wasn't mostly sex, I can tell you that. We weren't that worried about that.
So it would be...
No, it was just a case of, you know...
Talk about home or the war? Well,
that's right, anything like that. And then different ones would be writing the letters and all that business. But it was very difficult to fill a day in. Very difficult when you're in the line, because about 7 o'clock every night you used to get the barrage. Jerry used to send the barrage out on us, and our lot would send it back in return, or Vicky Herky, whichever decided to have a go first.
That was at 7?
That was about 7 o'clock every night.
And what was that barrage like?
Well, it was a field gun, so 45s, you know. They had the 45s there, and of course there was the howitzers, the 60s, and then of course the machine guns, they'd have a go every now and again.
Besides this 7 o'clock affair, was there much artillery during the day?
Oh, odd spasms, yes. If they got a bit of a quiver on, they'd have a do. Both lots.
Could you tell the difference between the different types of shells?
Well, we could see which way they were bloody coming. We couldn't tell the difference between them. The only one that was very predominant was what Jerry had in his, and he called it the flying pig. And it was a balloon type of thing, about a foot to 18 inches in length, like a big balloon. And they used to send them over.
Was that artillery or mortars?
That was artillery. And they were sent over. We had special guns for them, I think. And when it got above you, the whole thing exploded. And it was loaded with all sorts of shrapnel, nails, everything. And by God, if you got onto one of them, we looked at, didn't do it very often, but when they came over, it was, oh, for God's sake, move, you know. Because they always caused a lot of wounded in that, one of them coming down.
They were fired from behind the German lines.
And they were never, they never go higher than about a three-story building. Oh, we could see them there as clear as anything. There they were, coming over. By God. There was only one at a time. But by God, he did some trouble.
What other type? Did you know about, what about whiz bangs, that sort of thing? Were you aware of them? The different types?
We had every one of them, we had them all.
Were you frightened of shelling? I mean, how did it affect you?
Well, it didn't do me any good, did it? It was a case of, hope to God this is for me. That's got my name on, I'm going to be unlucky.
We didn't have aeroplanes
like we have that in the Second War, but the aeroplanes we had were all monoplanes, you see. And the aviators, they used to come along, they'd only got machine guns, you see, there was hardly any bombing, but they had the machine guns, and they used to travel along the trenches with a gun going away, you know, with a machine gun, empty the machine gun along that, say, piece of trench. You were in that vicinity. Well, you get something up your backside or somewhere else.
But would you take cover in the circumstances?
Oh, yes, definitely. About a piece of corrugated iron on the top of the trench you used to put. On the top of the summits, you used to put a piece of corrugated iron there that you could duck under. At different levels, you know, different spaces. Well, that was just the fact that we thought, well, all right, we're under there. It was no damn use at all. If we got a shell or even machine gun bullets. But we felt better under that than you did out in the open.
What about with artillery? When you were under, say, the barrage at 7 o'clock, would you take cover at the bottom of the trench, or would you go into a cubby hole?
We'd go into the best place. Go for that, find the best place you could.
And which did you think was best?
Well, in the cubby hole. Not on the bottom of the trench. If you're in the open, you're bound to get something, aren't you?
Were you worried about being buried alive at all? I mean, did that sort of thing worry you?
No, never worried me. Never bothered me.
How much sort of general small arms fire was there during the day? Machine gun and rifle fire?
Oh, it was spasmodic all the time, you see. Absolutely. If anything happened, you'd have a go over it. You see, at the night, they used to have these... what do you call them, scouting parties.
I'm going to ask you about them later. Yeah. I really mean during the day. Would you have much machine guns?
Very little.
Would you ever fire your rifle during the day?
Well, if it was necessary, obviously.
When would it be necessary, though?
When you got orders, there was something there, target to... If there was anything happening in the German lines and they were moving and we could see it.
Who would give the orders?
Well, the officer, obviously. Or the officer, or the sergeant, NCOs.
Would that sort of movement happen often that you could see?
Well, we got plenty of times, yes.
What about sniping? Was sniping?
Ah, no, sniping, yes. Well, you see, when they were sniping, they used to have a fixed rifle on a tripod. And, of course, they were fixed on one place. You see, anything that passed there, above the surface, bang, they'd get it. You see?
Did you suffer many casualties from sniping?
Quite a few. There's quite a few. Our lads used to do it as well. The machine guns used to have a go every now and again if they saw anything. Because, you see, we got the two lots of machine guns. We had the Lewis gunners, which were fired by our own lads. We had a Lewis gun say to each platoon, and you got a number one, number two, and then you're panicking carriers. I was number two for a long time on the Lewis gun. And the fellow the gunner was only one of the lads out of the company, but he was in charge of the gun, the firing, and I was the one that loaded the pannikins for him.
When did you start doing that job?
Well, I couldn't actually say that. It was just, as they wanted men for guns, they just bunged you in and that was it.
So you weren't given any special training?
Oh, we all got training on Lewis guns, oh yeah.
Where at?
Different, wherever you might be, different places outside the line.
So continuous, on and off?
Oh, yes. Pretty well. Yeah, you could always go and help on the gun if you wanted to.
And you were in charge. What was your job as number two then? You loaded the pennies. Did you have to do anything else?
That was the sole job of the number two. You have to take one pannikin off and load the other on. And as well, then you got this, all the rest of the platoon were doing nothing but just loading the pannikins. They were just, anybody's a part of the there was one and two who was in charge of the gun, as you might say. And then, obviously, I just have to say about the loose gun, what happens if you get a number one stoppage, you see? Well, that was when the gun stopped firing. Well, it's the idea was pull back the cocking handle, rotate the magazine and carry on. And if it didn't go next time, and you had a number two stoppage, what do you do then? Well, throw the bloody gun away and get another. If you could, that was it. But you see, all the rest of them, the lads, there were 57 bullets in a Lewis gun, 57 bullets in that. And the pannikin.
You say they loaded them up for you?
Yeah.
They actually put the bullets in.
57 all round, and they passed me the complete pannikin. As I got another off the gun, I passed them back to them. Every complete process, right, continuous.
So they weren't ready loaded for you?
They were when I got them off the lad.
No, I mean, they weren't ready loaded for the platoon?
No, they had to load all the guns, all the Lewis guns. See, and then we had the machine gun corps. They had them through the belt, you know. Yes. And they used to come to you sometimes. They could go to anywhere. They were a regiment on their own, a machine gun corps. You see, and they used to come to different regiments, wherever they might be wanted. Sometimes he'd come round and have a bit of a blast at Jerry, just to show he was alive, and that was it.
What did you think of the Lewis gun?
It was all right, nothing wrong with it.
Did you ever get a chance to fire it yourself much?
Well, you had to pass a course with it. I had to go through a course of it. Just the same as going through the course that when you went for your rifle.
When have you done that course?
Well,
in France?
I did it in France, yes. When we came out the line, we did, so many be taking the part of the job for you to do outside the line.
And you thought it was a good weapon?
It was a good weapon, yeah. It was as good as a machine gun.
What about mortars? Did you have much experience?
Didn't have much, no, not mortars.
Did the Germans use them in Innenwerfer?
They did, yes, but not much. They weren't very prevalent, no. The artillery and the rifle fire and the machine guns, that was about the lot for you.
What about hand grenades? Were they used in normal thing or just in big attacks?
In big attacks, yes.
So, would you ever get any hand grenade activity when you were just in your trenches?
Well, you have them there, and you have to take them out. If you were going on advancing any time, you'd have to take them with you.
But when you were static, that you just had them and...
That was it, yeah. Well, you see, talking about grenades, as I told you, I went down to a police course.
Tell me about that course. That was down by the airfield there.
Yes, I went on that course, and
what did it consist of?
It consists of, firstly, rifle bombing. Well, now the rifle grenadiers, on the top of his rifle, he had a steel cup, which was about so wide and about that deep.
About 4 inches deep, 3 inches.
Yes, and that's fastened onto the top of your rifle. And in the side of that, near the top, there was a little vent, just about that, half inch by a couple of inches. There was a little door on that, a little lever, and that moved forward and backward. Well, what you had to do, you had to get the bomb, take the lever off, and put it in that cup. And on the bottom of it, you'd have to screw a steel rod that went down in the butt of the rifle. Well, that little opening at the top, vent, if you had it closed, all the gases were kept in, and it's by 180 yards. Now if you had the vent open, the gases were all escaping, you'd go 90 yards. Well, then you could regulate that vent then at 15 yard intervals. By there were 6 15 yard intervals there, and you could move that to whatever distance you wanted it to go. And when you fired it, you didn't have your rifle with the butt like that. You had to kneel down on your right leg and pull the rifle, try it into your knee, and have it right alongside your knee, and the wrong way around, with the butt here and your rifle going up there. And then when you fired it, you'd got to that. You have to go like that and get away. If you went like that and kept your thumb there, you'd be one missing, because it went 3 inches in the earth. It's for the recoil, took the rifle butt 3 inches into the earth easily.
So what did you do? Could you just explain in words? They won't be able to see that. What did you actually do when you fired it? You
pressed the trigger and pulled your thumb quickly away so as to miss the recoil, you see. That was it. Well, then, when we did that, we had the ordinary bombing, Mills's bomb, and then we had, of course, of
that. Before we go on to that, the ordinary bomb, what did you think of the rifle grenade? Did you think it was a good weapon?
I never saw it used. I never saw anybody use it, but we never used it, you know, while I was in there.
So you were trained in it at this aerodrome?
That's the last I heard about it. I never carried one about. I never saw one of the rods.
Did you think it had possibilities, or did you... What did you think of it?
It had quite a lot of possibilities, because you could fire it to a range. Anything from 180 to 90 yards, you see.
Did you think it was safe?
Safe enough, yes, for firing. Unless you were a damn clown. Once you'd done it, you were all right.
What could you do wrong? What do you mean? If you're a clown?
Well, if you left your thumb in and pressed the lever down straight, you'd get your thumb would be smashed and taken in down with the earth.
What about the risk of them exploding straight away?
Well, you couldn't do that. It wasn't like a Mills's bomb, because you fired it, and once you'd press that trigger, the detonator, the bullet rather, had shot up the rifle bore and detonated, you see. The detonator was at the top, and that sent the bomb off, so you couldn't have any accidents with it.
So you were quite confident in it, you just never got the chance to use it?
We never used it, no.
And what you were training that, you said also you were training in the normal mills. What extra training did you get?
Oh, well, that was just throwing different distances, you know, and all that. There was nothing to it, really, we were just throwing the bomb.
Were they live bombs this time, or...?
Oh, no, they wouldn't waste them, no. They just get the ordinary dummy bombs without any detonator in, you see.
Was there anything else they taught you about the bombs while you were at that course?
Yes, there was one that I've never seen and I've never heard of. I don't know whether anybody else ever did. We had a speciality there, that course, of egg bombs. Now, these egg bombs were just the size of an egg, and they were painted yellow, and there's the egg like that, and then at the top of it there was a little half inch detonator, you see. There was nothing you could do with it. It was just there, and that little top piece was stuck out about quarter of an inch by half an inch. And the idea of them was, you didn't throw them over arm like you did with the Millses. You just picked them up and you threw them like a stone, and you could throw them well as far as your strength would take you. Now, when you were doing them, you had to have the butt of your rifle on your left shoulder. You had to have your rifle over your left shoulder, and you had your hand, that left hand, he held tightly onto your butt. Well, then you got the bomb, and all he did was bash that little top piece into the bomb on the side of your butt, use your butt to hammer it down, and when that had just vanished, it had exploded, and you got the score for the 8 seconds to just get rid of that little bugger out of the road, you see. But never saw any of them up the line. The only place I saw them was there.
Did you like them?
They were marvellous. You could put them in your pocket. You could carry them about in your pocket, but there was no fear of any accident with them.
You couldn't knock the detonator in with a sort of with just a bang on
no,
the leg.
No, you had to bang it on the butt of the rifle.
It was a hard knock.
It was hard bang, yes. And then you got rid of it, you see. When you could see when you could hear it hissing when it started, the detonator started, and you got the old eight seconds then to get rid either that or run.
And you never actually you threw them. Did you throw them?
Oh, I threw them in the course. Yes,
and they were alive on the course, were they?
No, they weren't alive. We had all the lectures on it, you know.
But they told you they hissed.
We got lectures on everything. You
so
see.
You never threw a real one?
Not one of them little ones, no. I never saw one up the line.
But you'd have liked to have seen them up there.
Well, I told the officers there. I was to put a report in from the course, and I told one of the officers about them. I said these be a godsend because you could throw them like throwing a stone, and they had a nasty little explosion. We had this explosion depicted to us to see what effect they had by. You know, there's some of these tutors, and I thought they were a damn good thing. They could knock one or two men out if you got in amongst them. Not only the damage of the mills, obviously, but they would do a tiny little bit of damage.
Was there anything else you did on this course then that you remember?
No, there was just those three lots. There was a Orkney Mills, and there was a grenade, and there was these leg bombs.
So when you came back, would you train other men in what you'd learned, or would you?
There was never any need. We never used them, did we?
Was that the idea? Sorry, I didn't.
But the idea was for us to learn, and then to train others to how to do it. And that, well, the rifle bombs. Well, I never saw one of those cups. When I got back up the line, I never saw them anywhere. All we got was the Orkney Mills' bomber, which you threw.
So we were talking about bombs. Was there much gas in there? Or shells?
I think we got gas twice.
Was this while you were at Heberton?
We was in Heberton, yes. We got two doos of gas.
What was that like?
And the first one came. And I knew what to expect because the previous week I'd been down the line to headquarters and I'd gone along the main road that was, and while I was there, going along there, I saw a detachment of our regiment, of another regiment, digging on the side of the road, and they'd got these about 15 like a beer barrel style of things, only they were metal containers round, and they were being placed in the earth facing so on the slope from the earth up the surface, and they'd be about that height, about 18 inches or so, and they'd be about say a foot wide, and I just sort of thought, what the hell have we got here? And I waited and I saw them ignite these the fuses for this lot, and then over they went. They were cylinders of gas going over from our place to Jerry. Unfortunately, the ruddy wind changed and we got it all back free. But it wasn't dangerous stuff, it was only what I might say tear gas. It made you run your nose, your eyes run, your ears run, everything. And the second lot we got, there was a little copse there. And for some reason, this bombing come over. There's a load of bombs, gas. And we could see it coming.
Bombs from aircraft?
No, from like ours lot were. The tanks, they were same as ours, cylinders. And they came over, and they dropped short, obviously, and relied on the wind coming over us. We were in trenches there, and I'd gone out, we'd all got our gas masks, and I'd got mine, on the firing bay in the trench, and I went down to see a mate of mine, and while I was down there, this stuff come over, and we could see it. I have no mask. Well, I got back there eventually. I went down as soon as I could. And when I tried to get my gas mask on, my eyes were running, my nose was running, my mouth was running, everything. And I couldn't get the damn thing on properly. But we didn't get a very bad deal. It soon sort of evaporated. And it was in, with it being in a copse. You see, the gas is everything there.